Forensic, that's not what I wanted. That wasn't the song I wanted, but I guess we're taking it. February 19th, 2015, this is the Hockey Guys Podcast. Yours truly, Hunter Crowther, with my co-host, Chris Shannon. Chris, what's up?
Nothing much, man. What's up?
Not much. I thought I had the right song picked. For everyone listening, I had AC/DC Back in Black set, but I guess David Bowie climbed in and hijacked it. That's too bad. It's disappointing.
Yeah.
It's brutal. Got a lot to talk about today. We're just going to dive right into it. Joining us right now is the correspondent for the Boston Bruins for the Hockey Guys. He's an expert in the world of analytics and the owner of one of the coolest Twitter handles out there, at Dirty Water Buzz. His name's Mitch Cole. Mitch, what's up, man?
What's going on, guys?
Not a whole lot? Not a whole lot? All right. I'm all for awkward silences, but let's get the show started. Mitch, let's talk about the Boston Bruins. They've been struggling as of late, and especially with a shootout loss last night against the Edmonton Oilers. This team seems like they're just completely falling off the rails, and at this rate, they might not even make the playoffs. Give us your general assessment so far of the Bruins.
It's really hard to figure out exactly what's going wrong with this team. I think part of it is the fact that they didn't replace the 30 goals they got from Jerome again the last year, and the defense is just bad. I mean, you look at the analytics side of it, and you have Dennis Seidenberg, who is probably the worst possession defenseman on the team in a top four role as the second pairing anchor, playing with Adam McQuaid, who at best the bottom pairing defenseman. And you watch them, you put in the eye test and you watch them play defense, and they're running around their own zone. They can never get the puck out, and they're always pinned. It's ridiculous watching this team, and you see the talent they have, and then you see the mediocrity they put out. It's frustrating.
Yeah, I bet. So, Mitch, with the struggles recently with Boston, everyone's throwing out everyone's name, Louis Erickson, Dennis Seidenberg. But if you're the Boston Bruins, do you look at trading Zdeno Chara? Maybe you can get something
no.
for him.
If you're trading Zdeno Chara, you may as well tear the entire thing down and start from scratch all over again.
Mm-hmm.
Chara,
so what do you do?
Chara is this team. Zdeno Chara drives this team completely. And you're still not at that point where you look at trading, because he's still one of the most elite defensemen in the game. He still drives possession with the best of them. He still takes away the entire side of the ice. Yeah, he's lost a step, but that doesn't mean you trade a guy just because he's declined a little bit. You just don't do that, especially when he's your captain and your best player.
So what do you think Boston's lacking most right now? What's with this recent struggle? I mean, last year there were one of the top teams in the Eastern Conference, and this year, I know there's been some injuries, but even recently with this healthy team, they're really struggling.
I think one of the biggest issues, aside from the obvious lack of scoring in the defense, is their lack of speed. You saw that actually exploited by Montreal last year. I think that's one of the biggest reasons they lost. They don't possess the same kind of speed, and you know, especially in the bottom six, they don't have the speed. They didn't have the ability to match the speed that the Canadians put out there. And it just shows this year when you have faster teams go out there, the Bruins just can't keep up.
Mm-hmm.
Mitch, talking about declining players, aside from Chara, Chris Kelly and Dennis Seidenberg are two players that are both in their mid-30s and getting close to the end of their deals. Chris Kelly's got another year after this one with a $3 million cap hit, and Seidenberg's got a $4 million cap hit till the end of 2018. If there's a market for these kind of players, do you make a move? Or
absolutely.
Do you even consider, or like, what kind of thing are you looking for in a trade for these two guys?
With Dennis Seidenberg, really, I think it's whatever you can get for him at this point. He's got the no trade clause, but I don't know if you guys saw the report earlier from, I believe it was The Score or Sportsnet, saying that if the Bruins came to him and said, you know, will you waive your no trade clause? He would. He doesn't want to be here if the team doesn't want him here. So there is that. I think with Seidenberg, you should take whatever you can get. But Chris Kelly, you know, he as much as he is overpaid, he's not the biggest issue, and it's not he's not really someone you seek out the deal because he has been very good for them and very effective this year in the third line role. But if someone does come to you with a pretty good offer, then I mean you should take that and run with it.
With their cap situation now, they really can't pursue a free agent either unless they do a trade. I mean, is there any free agent you would want and maybe think they could pursue, or is it the cap just holding them back?
I don't know. I'm not sure of the list of free agents for this upcoming season outside of the guys the Bruins have expiring. But I'm not sure really, especially if you do, you know, trade off a few guys like, say, Carl Soderberg and Dennis Seidenberg, and you know, even the rumored Lou Eriksson possible trading. I'm not really sure who you bring in to fill those roles other than, you know, bring up some of your young players to see if they can fill those holes for you.
Mm-hmm. Mitch, David Pastrnak has been an interesting addition to the Bruins this year, the 2014 first-round pick. Scott Cullen and TSN today wrote an article on the 18-year-old and talked about how for players with a minimum of 200 minutes, he's second on the Bruins with a 57.9 Corsi 4. What have you thought of the young Czech winger?
He's just something else. I mean, he was a great find for the Bruins with that late in the draft. I mean, I remember during the Olympics seeing a lot of people tweeting about it and saying, you know, wondering how exactly he fell out of the top 10 all the way to 25. I talked about the lack of speed the Bruins have. I think that's something he brings. You see him skating, he flies up and down the ice, and he uses his speed and his creative offensive ability to create scoring chances for them, and he's not afraid to shoot the puck, and that's really why he has such a high possession number.
Do you see Malcolm Subban playing on one of these road trip games out west? I was just surprised he didn't play yesterday, and I still don't understand the reasoning of not doing that, but, you know, they're out west, and maybe it's a time to get him some games.
Earlier today, actually, Fudo Shinzawa of Boston Globe tweeted out that there's some thought either. I believe he said there's some thought that Subban could start tomorrow, I believe, in St. Louis. And also, they just called up rookie Brian Ferland. He could also make his debut in St. Louis. So, I mean, that's really not the ideal place to want to start Subban.
Yeah.
Against one of the best teams in the league, I think it would have been better off to start him against Edmonton, but I mean, whatever goes, I guess. Whatever Claude Julien decides is best.
Mitch, my last Bruins question. It's been a pretty rough season for Milan Lucic this year. He's on pace for one of his worst statistical full seasons. He's only got 11 goals right now, and he's a UFA at the end of next season. Thoughts on Lucic, and is it time for the young power forward to maybe make a move to another team?
Absolutely. I've been a big proponent of this all year, dealing him away. He's really, a lot of what he does is driven by playing with David Krejci, and he saw at the beginning of the season when Krejci was injured, he wasn't able to play. They put him on a line with, I believe, Ryan Spooner, and a lot of people took that as a knock on Spooner, but Lucic didn't perform, and he hasn't been able to perform away from Krejci at all, really, so... And even this year, he hasn't performed well with Krejci. So I think at this point, you kind of have to search around and see what you can get back for him. I still think there's a lot of teams and a lot of GMs that would give up quite a bit to land Lucic. So it's absolutely something worth exploring over the summer.
As a Montreal Canadian fan, I hate Lucic so much, but I wish he was on their team. I mean, he's the perfect guy that would fit that team to make them a contender. I'd be surprised to see Boston trade him. I mean, he seems like the guy that's a Boston Bruin in the heart and just the way he plays. But I bet there's a big market for that type of player. I mean, there's no one like Lucic.
I mean, he's described as one of those big power forwards. But he's a power forward. But I don't think he's a first-line player at all anymore. And I think, really, like I said, you – got to see what you can get for him. If someone gives you a good deal, absolutely, you should run with it. Take it.
Tomorrow's a big day for NHL.com as they add analytics to their site. It's a major stride for a subject that only a few years ago was only practiced and preached by members of the blogosphere and Twitter users and other guys who just kept their own independent blog. Just as a general question, how did you start getting into analytics, Mitch?
I remember looking around last year and just seeing a lot of people talking about it. I was never really sure what exactly it was, but I figured, you know, it's clearly something up and coming. So if I want to get into the world of hockey after I finish school, I should probably get into that. So I did some research. I started getting into Corsi, and now you have it. I'm into all the stats. I know a lot about them. So I guess it's really how I got into it, seeing a lot of people talking about it, whether it was bad or good.
Yeah, I've just started to actually get into analytics a little bit more. I mean, you know, we all see that it's a growing thing. But I wonder, there's a lot of fights going on between the old hockey writers and the new hockey writers and how analytics is nothing. And even coaches, you know, they come into this fight. Babcock says he doesn't give a crap about analytics or how many times someone shoots the puck. Like, there's been examples of coaches saying how they use it and how they don't. I mean, it's usually Corey and Fenwick that are the two big ones, but are there other stats that you think after this NHL unleashes the new analytics, you think that we'll see some new categories become more popular?
I don't know. It's hard to say. I do know that this. I'm pretty sure that when they do unveil the new stats page tomorrow, assuming we can access it, because right now you go to the link and you have to type in a username and password that nobody has to access it. So assuming you don't have to pay for it, I'm pretty sure they're going to have new names for all the stats. So we'll have to see what they call them. But it's hard to say right now if there's any new stats. Right now, I don't think there's any out there. There's always people working on new stuff and trying to tweak different stats. But I think when really we'll see new stats is when we kind of see the effect of the new puck tracking technology the NHL tried out at the All-Star game. I think that's when we'll really see if there's anything new that comes out, and that's really when I think that's going to be the deciding factor.
Apart from coaches and players and execs around the league, there seems to be a real rebellion against analytics from mainstream media and a lot of beat reporters. Why do you think there's such a resistance against them?
I think part of it is the fact that one of these older writers, the guys who write for newspapers, the way they got their jobs was they had to put in their time. They had to pay their dues by covering crap beats, high school beats, college beats, really, really bad small market papers before they finally got to covering the team they're covering right now. And a lot of these, they see a lot of kids our age coming in and we're getting credentials right off the bat. We're making names for ourselves and we're coming up with all these new stats. And I think they feel threatened, honestly. I think that's a big part of it, the fact that they feel like their jobs are being threatened and their livelihoods are threatened.
That's a good point. I agree with that for sure. With all these new analytic things happening, I mean, people have said, oh, analytics are going to die sometime. It can't last. Do you think it will be a lasting part of the NHL?
I do, honestly. You go back, we switch over to baseball for a second. You know, you look at all the sabermetrics and you look at Billy Beane using OBP on base percentage back in 2003, 2004, in that area of time. A lot of people talking about how it was useless and all these stats were going to go away and they're going to die soon. And now you see games and these TV broadcasts are generally using OBP, just putting them in their score line. So I don't think that these analytics are going to go away anytime soon. And I think the best option for people who aren't sure what to do about it is to just accept it and try to understand it.
Last question from me, Mitch, and thanks for coming on today. We appreciate it.
No problem.
I'll ask you more about players now around the league. In your research of analytics, who are some players in the NHL who maybe before the introduction of advanced stats were somewhat overlooked or miscasted, but now with the addition of analytics, now they're becoming more well-known players?
I think the three names that come to my mind first are Jake Muzzin, Patrice Bergeron, and Justin Williams. I mean, everyone knows the story of Patrice Bergeron, great two-way forward, but outside of Boston before really anyone started tracking shot attempts and analytics, he was really just kind of an unknown guy. He was underrated. He was really good. People knew he was good, but no one really knew the extent of his impact until you started looking at his possession numbers and his possession impact. And really, it just shows that he drives his Bruins team, and he's such a phenomenal player. Jake Muzzin, the other one, he's a young player. Some people might think that maybe playing with Drew Doughty has driven his possession stats up, but research that I've seen recently has shown that it's actually quite the opposite. He's actually got a higher possession number when he's playing without Drew Doughty, which is absolutely incredible because Drew Doughty is a very, very good player, as we all know. And Justin Williams, I think everyone knows after the Cup Final level, calls him a Corsi God. Always a high possession number. He helps drive that LA Kings team in possession. He helps them. He just kind of helps fuel them. And I think before analytics, he kind of would have just been seen as a decent middle six role guy.
Chris, any other
questions? Mitch, for having you on. No, I think I'm good. You know, that was really good, Mitch. You know your stuff about the Bruins and analytics, and you got a future, man.
Thank you.
Thank you. Goes to Mitch Cole of the Hockey Guys with arguably the coolest Twitter name out there. Mitch, if you're still out there, what are the origins of Dirty Water Buzz again?
When I was in high school, I started writing. Really, I just started writing because I wanted to talk about hockey without someone telling me to shut up. So I started my own little blog, and it kind of grew to my own website, and I called it Dirty Water Buzz. And when I made a Twitter handle for the site, that was the name of the Twitter handle. And when I just kind of jumped on with other outlets, I just changed it to my name. But I never changed the handle, so I've just left it like that. It's just kind of become, I guess you'd call it, my trademark thing.
That's amazing. That's awesome. Awesome. All right, Mitch, thanks again for coming on, and hopefully we'll have you back soon.
All right, thanks, guys.
That is Mitch Cole of the Hockey Guys. Follow him at Twitter at Dirty Water Buzz. You know, I really liked his point about Jake Muzzin. And he's a player who, if you follow Stephen Birch on Twitter, he's an analytics guru, and he always pumps Muzzin's tires. And when you really look at it, like right now this season, 5-on-5, he's got a 57.8 Corsi. And like you said, he's arguably someone who makes Drew Doughty better as opposed to Doughty making him better.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, that LA Kings defense group is just, it's some of the young guys like Muzzin, Martinez, Doughty for sure, they're all so good. I mean, with that team, I'm going to bring in a different subject. With that free agent market this year, you know, like maybe in the deadline, they'll go after a guy like Sakara or McCulloch on Arizona. But like, it's such a young defensive corp. Like, they may be bad this year, which I don't see them doing. I mean, this team has surprised us in so many ways. I can't see them letting it out this year. I mean, the next 10 years, they must be amazing with these three guys. I mean, Martinez, I've watched a lot of LA this year. He's probably one of the most underrated defensemen out there. I find him so solid with his game and a great skater. And he was clutch with that goal last year, which kind of got his name out with the winning goal of the Stanley Cup.
Not to mention, too, another player, Braden McNabb, who is at 55% right now for this season. I look at his numbers, and it really amazes me how this team is able to put together such a responsible defensive group where they're able to generate so much offense from their own end. Not to mention just have, like, we keep bringing up Corsi, but my God, these guys are analytical kings. And it's no surprise, like, they've won the Stanley Cup two of the last 3 years.
Yeah, and it only strengthens the analytic guy's point of how analytics should be used in NHL. It's a growing thing. I'm excited. I really, at the beginning of my first year at analytics, I was kind of like, I'm too lazy. I don't want to hear about this stuff. It'll die down. And it really has grown, and I've really gotten into it. I mean, there's certain analytic charts that I'm kind of seeing I don't think needs to be used, but like the Fenwick and the Corsi and the puck possession, a lot of that it just shows you these players, and it goes more in-depth in the game, and I find it just helps us out.
The biggest thing that's frustrating for me about analytics is, and the place of conversation where most analytic debates happen is on Twitter. It always seems on Twitter that the old-school hockey guys always demean the quote-unquote basement bloggers or nerds, and then in turn, the guys who are big promoters of analytics and churn out a lot of content online, they always seem to be so critical and narcissistic towards mainstream media. It almost feels like, why can't both sides just be like, listen, you got to watch some of the game, but at the same time, you have to use this data to quantify and really get a grasp of the game.
And that's a great point, because we have to remember, the game is the most important thing. I mean, analytics aside, the game is where everything is. You don't, I mean, there's going to be players that aren't analytic gurus and that aren't amazing, but they're going to be a solid guy out there that will play and you need on your team. It's not all about analytics. It's a point to reference off of, which is what you need. I mean, it's just something to strengthen up your point. And analytics, it's just a growing thing and it will grow. It's NHL took it up with this, with their new thing coming up on the NHL.com tomorrow. I mean, it's just a growing thing in the NHL, and it's exciting because it grows analytics all over the place in every sport. I mean, football, basketball, I know there's a big debate with it, and it's just kind of growing. But baseball, it's been there for a couple of years now, and it's really a huge part of baseball. Maybe it'll be like that in hockey.
One last point in analytics, and then we'll move on to our final topic. I met Matty Pfeiffer last spring at the Memorial Cup in London, Ontario, and Matty was the director of analytics for the Ottawa 67s in the Ontario Hockey League. And just having conversations with him about it, you can see that when you talk to him, it almost feels like he's 5 years ahead of time. And he's showing me software and data on like just the future of the game and tracking the puck and seeing how players move. And just like, I sound like I'm over my head, but when you really get an idea of what the future is for analytics, you can see that, you know, it really is an adapt or die kind of thing. You can argue it, you can say that it's useless, and you can say that, well, you have to watch the game, but the real reality is the next generation of hockey analysis is going to be largely based off of advanced stats.
Yeah, it's exciting. It's just another great thing to reference off of. And Twitter and these bloggers, I mean, it's something that's being used all the time now. And people just have to be open to it. And it's the new hockey fan will grow with it, and that's the perfect thing with this sport growing so much every day.
Absolutely. All right, changing the conversation. For the last 7 minutes of the show, you and I were having a unique discussion before about Connor McDavid, who's the universal projected first overall pick for this year's draft. A lot of teams are in the hunt for it. You got your Buffaloes, your Edmontons, your Carolinas, your Phoenixes. You and I have conflicting ideologies about where McDavid would boost a franchise the most. Chris, start off.
Yeah, I'd love to. So I've thought about this a lot, and, you know, he's a generational player. He's a Sidney Crosby, Alex Ovechkin-type guy that brings people to come watch your team. And I think the team that needs that most is the Buffalo Sabres. Now, like you said, Hunter, yesterday, he tweeted me saying Buffalo is where people go to die or where teams go to die. But McDavid will thrive there. You know, it's a great hockey market. It's a great hockey market. But it just hasn't won. It hasn't been consistent in the last couple of years. But when you've got a guy like McDavid, he drives people to that game. That place will be sold out because everyone wants to see McDavid that first night. He's playing with Evander Kane on the first line. I mean, I just think it's a perfect situation because he'll fit in perfectly with that team. I think Tim Nolan is an amazing coach. Tim Murray is a crazy job. You know, he's one of my favorite general managers out there because he's come into probably the worst situation, worked from the Maple Leafs, and has totally made this team. You know, right now you don't see it, but the prospects, the trades they've done, you can see that he knows, he has a vision for this team. So I think McDavid is for sure part of that, and he will, like I said, he'll bring people to see him, see the Sabres, and it'll be a huge market. And also,
he could eventually, maybe in a couple years, bring this team to the playoffs, which is what we all want to see.
My biggest thing about the NHL, and if you look back in the mid-90s when there was a massive explosion of expansion in these southwestern markets, in your Atlantas, Anaheims, San Jose's, Phoenix, the list goes on, their biggest goal was to grow the game. And when I look at the NHL right now, obviously the weakest team in the league that everyone keeps thinking is going to move and everyone's just waiting for the shoe to drop is the Phoenix Coyotes. As much as I would love to see another team, I'd love to see a team in Seattle or Quebec City or these quote-unquote traditional hockey markets, the point of that expansion in the 90s was to expand the game to markets that it never had before. And if you have to look no further than next year, the first projected first overall pick for 2016 is Austin Matthews, who is from Phoenix. He grew up in Arizona. Hockey's expanding in these markets, and when you have a guy like Connor McDavid, who everyone keeps stressing is the next generational talent, and he's the next Sidney Crosby, if you put him in a market like Phoenix, where people don't care about the game, people don't care about the team, but if they hear that the next big hotshot, the next quote-unquote LeBron of hockey plays in my backyard, I'm going to go watch. And for a market like Phoenix that's lost so much money, like I can't even stress enough, they hemorrhage money. And if you are able to bring in someone like that, like Connor McDavid, you're doing a service to that franchise and to the league itself that can only expand in a way that someone like a McDavid could give you.
Yeah, I'm not going to fight with you there. I totally agree with everything you're saying. Now, if I'm Phoenix, you know, maybe you don't be so pissed that you didn't get McDavid because you got Austin Matthews. And I think even Austin Matthews can pull a bigger crowd than McDavid. I mean, this is 2 years away. I mean, it's a lot to talk about. But this guy, he's from Arizona, like you said, and he's just – you saw him this World Juniors on Team USA, and you could see that he was special, and he was younger than most of the players out there. I mean, he's a special guy. But like I said, and I've said it, the reason I went with Buffalo is because I think they deserve – I mean, that market is such a good hockey market. Sports market itself, I mean, the Bills, you know, as much as they suck, they still get people to go see the games. When you get a guy like McDavid, I just find that'll make that team so much better. And this is a bold prediction, but if everything goes right next year, and let's say they get their defensemen step up, their prospects, and they get a solid number one goalie, could they be a playoff team? This is a prediction I'm making. They could be a playoff team if they get Connor McDavid and a number one goalie, a real number one goalie, maybe Miami out of San Jose.
I don't know. Buffalo, like, isn't Buffalo a place where things go to die? I mean, like, this is a city that's lost, like, four straight Super Bowls. They got screwed in their OT clinching goal, or Dallas's OT clinching goal. Their football team's been terrible. They're, like, everything about that franchise is almost a joke that if I'm Connor McDavid, why would I want to go to a Buffalo or an Edmonton or a franchise that's been dwelling? I want to go to a place that's warm. B, a coach in Dave Tippett, who is widely regarded as one of the most respected coaches in hockey, I would love to go to a Phoenix if I'm him. If I'm the NHL too, let alone, like, screw Buffalo and Edmonton, and heck, even screw the idea of hometown McDavid coming to Toronto and saving the Leafs. I am fully on board Connor McDavid going to Phoenix and creating a new explosion of growth within southern U.S. markets.
All right, so you won that one. I'll give it to you because I agree. that, yeah. But, all right, Buffalo, Eichel. You know, Eichel and Kane. I see it. Next year, playoffs.
Playoffs, boom! Right on.
Yeah.
All right, we've got 30 seconds left as my final thing. You can follow me at Hunter Crowther. You can follow Chris at ChrisShannon16. Follow our call-in guest, Mitch Cole, at Dirty Water Buzz. Chris, 10 seconds, last thoughts.
Go, Habs, go. They're going to beat the Panthers tonight. Let's go.
Man, what a troll. God. Just because of that, I hope the Habs miss the playoffs. Anyway, tune in next time for the hockey guys.
How are the Leafs?
Put on your red shoes and dance.